It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's episode 88 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This time I've got a great interview with Cole Haddon, creator of a Kickstarter comic I think you're really going to enjoy called Space Gladiator. It's all about the last human in the galaxy, or so he thinks, and his attempt to survive and flourish. We talk about how the comic came to be and some other projects he's working on, so I'm sure you'll enjoy the discussion. Then there's news and previews discussing the latest April numbers, which I'm sure you're going to want to hear about. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Cole Haddon, creator of a Kickstarter book that I really love called Space Gladiator. How are you doing today, Cole?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you?
I'm doing well, doing well. I'm glad I get a chance to talk with you about this fun book. It's a Kickstarter book, and I always love Kickstarter's comics because they have usually self-contained stories, and there's a lot of fun involved in it, too, and I think that's one of the things about Space Gladiator I enjoy so much. You're mixing several different genres together. You've got sort of a Roman gladiator setup, as well as science fiction, and there's a lot of humor through this book that I got a kick out of. I thought this was a great book. I liked it a lot. Do you want to talk a little bit about where the idea for Space Gladiator came from?
Sure. I originally pitched it to Kickstarter 2 years ago, and it mostly spawned from my childhood love, and I still love it. The films of Ray Harryhausen. I was a bit of a monster nut, and that combined with, as bizarre as it sounds, the need in some way to react to how terrible the finale of Attack of the Clones was in that arena, Star Wars Attack of the Clones. I just thought George Lucas would have made up for the Phantom Menace had three Rancors come out of those gates instead of those three ridiculous creatures that came out. And I brought that up to Samantha Olsen at Kickstart about how I'd like to pit human beings without the Force, without anything like that, against monsters in arena combat in space, and that I'd like to do it with the last human being in existence, because I thought there were no better stakes than that. This character thrust into an arena where if he died, our species died with him. I thought there was some power to that, and that somehow whatever was innately human in him gave him a strength, an ability that the alien gladiators lacked.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the character. His name is Till, T-I-L,
yes,
which I liked about him. It starts out, he's in what appears to be something like a zoo. You actually think he's like in some kind of a dormitory or something when it comes up. And the part that made me laugh was he actually goes and sits on the toilet and he's reading a book called Obnoxious Famous People, or a magazine. And that made me laugh when I saw that. And then we turn around the other direction and we see there's all these aliens watching him go to the bathroom.
I love the idea of aliens recreating an Earth habitat in some way, that through their incredibly clumsy research of what life was, that this is the life that they imagined for human beings. And I always thought that the title Obnoxious Famous People was just the what would happen from translation into some alien language that People Magazine or Us Weekly would just translate to Obnoxious Famous People.
Well, I like that. He's sitting there reading that on the pot, which a lot of people do. They have magazines next to the toilet to do those kinds of things to take up their time. The funny thing about me, there's a couch that when a point the things get obliterated in that cage where he's living, and he moans the loss of his couch. And I thought that was funny. That's going to come up, play an important part later in the book, and we won't spoil that. But just bear in mind that that couch is going to have something to do when we get towards the end of the book, which I just thought was wonderful. Just a wonderful bit of story. Now, the interesting thing to me, too, is that he's being taken care of by aliens, and some of them are insect-looking like. Some of them are purple-skinned aliens. And you've got all different kinds of aliens, which to me was the sci-fi aspect of this. We get to see all these things. And I love this kind of story because we get to see things from a different perspective. And I thought you did a great job of laying out all these different alien races and how they interact. And I thought the human was kind of was really fun. He looks a little bit like a college guy, you know. And I thought that was kind of funny that he's the last human, and he's a blonde, kind of a athletic sort, thankfully, which is going to help him well when he starts getting into these combat situations.
Part of the fun was creating a 20-something year old, incredibly average loser. Who's not especially smart, not especially gifted in the ways that would be necessary to save the galaxy, and really just wants to sit on his couch and play video games most of the time, and how that character could somehow rise up and become the savior of the galaxy.
I guess you're talking about, like, a lot of people always think that in every one of us, there was a song that there's a hero inside of every one of us.
Mm.
And I thought of that song when I was reading this book because, you know, he's not – you're right. He's kind of an average guy, an average Joe.
It's and perfect wish fulfillment because I feel like this is the majority of the people who are reading comic books like me who in no way are suited to actual heroics.
Yeah.
At least if they're anything like me.
Well, he rises to the occasion, thankfully, dear old Till does. And we find out a little bit about his history and about his father. And we get to see him take on really huge red monsters and things like that. And he gets owned by a guy that looks like a rhinoceros of sorts. And as things go along, he gets involved with the politics of the universe at that point. And I just wondered, was the situation, you know, you've got the God Emperor. We come to see him the very first one. His mother tells him that she knows that he has murdered his own father in order to take that place. Was that based on anything that you had thought of, or was this sort of a historical thing? Because like I said, there's all these different genres mixed together, and I just thought it was funny that some of these things actually have some allusion to like human governments.
No, it's the inspiration was certainly the Egyptian pharaohs, who didn't so much become pharaohs by being crowned, but in some way were deified and made gods amongst men. And I thought that would be a lot of fun to play with the religious aspect, the religious obsession of our culture, and get some satire out of that and poke a little fun at the self-centeredness that can sometimes come out of that. And so that's where the God Emperor, who thinks that he is literally a divine being capable of affecting evolution, even on himself with self-modification and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
See, that fascinated me, I have to say. The one thing he didn't do was take, like, human parts. He would add pieces of other races that I guess he thought would enhance his own abilities. He's got this green arm sticking out as we get towards the climax of the book. He's doing all different kinds of things to enhance himself, and yet he looks down on humans as, like, a low life form instead. And I just thought that was kind of an interesting contrast, that this guy, he would take from other races as much as he wanted, but yet he would, even in that circumstance, he still considered himself better than even those races and even humans.
Mm. Well, the human beings in this world, I imagine that for the most part, we would be incredibly inadequate compared to other alien species out there, at least physically, in that that our most unique and powerful traits would be our sort of spark of humanity, what makes us human beings, the drive toward freedom and equality and rightness in some way. And that was our strength, which he couldn't quite cut off and modify himself with. If anything, he was he's terrified of it. And that's why human beings were hunted to extinction, because we poisoned other races with our crazy ideas.
Yeah, that's science fiction, all right. I can relate to that concept real well. I've seen that, and I enjoy that kind of exploration of the human condition versus others. Now, one of the things I loved about the book was that this was quite a nice balance between action sequences and character sequences. You know, you do enough character for us to actually care about these people, but then you put them in dangerous circumstances and we have to know what's going on. I found myself like turning the pages as quick as I could to find out what happens next. So I thought it was really nicely done. I thought the pacing was wonderful.
Thank you. It's actually largely the virtue of the format that Kickstart more or less forces on its creators, because you have so many pages. And instead of getting more than four issues to continue to expand, you have to wrap up, in this case, an incredibly epic story with a lot of different facets and a lot of world building in the equivalent of four issues of Space, which is not the easiest thing to do. I'm not sure how well I pulled it off, but the need to focus on character but then get back to the action was part of the rhythm that came from that. I'm of the habit of writing 8 to 10 page character sequences, which are not always, I think, the most exciting thing to read in comic books. But here I was forced to sort of outwit myself, my normal instincts.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's one of the things about Kickstarters I loved is oftentimes you get a complete story. You know, you start someplace and you end someplace. And like you take advantage of that format. And like I said, well, with the couch and stuff like that, there's a lot of things that are set up in the beginning that get wrapped up in the end. And I love the way that you did that. I thought that was really nicely put together. You know, so often when you read comics, you've got, you know, let's say you read Batman from month to month. You cannot possibly come to a conclusion because then people will stop buying the book.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do is you have to constantly keep us going along by making us worry about what's going to happen. The thing I love about Kickstart so much is that I actually, for a rare experience in my comic reading life, get to read a total story. And I love that. I thought Space Gladiator, like I said, you really took advantage of the format. And it was great fun.
Oh, thank you. It's a very fun format because I've done comic books before. I did a series with Dark Horse called The Strange Case of Mr. Hyde. It was four-issue miniseries. I've got something else with an illustrator that will be announced at Comic-Con coming up. But the four-issue series with Dark Horse, you have to sort of reintroduce the reader to the characters and the story with each issue. And in this case, you don't actually get to compile those issues later to give to somebody in a graphic novel format. Instead, you just hand them the graphic novel where they get to read start to finish without wasting any time on that, setting things up again. And you know that the reader will most likely pick up something like that couch and easily be able to connect it to the last pages of the graphic novel because they'll read it in its entirety.
Mm-hmm. Well, we get toward the climax of the book. And of course, what's happened is that Till has discovered a female along the way, which I thought was a wonderful, that I was so grateful to see that kind of stuff, that he was actually going to not be alone in the universe, that there was going to be someone he could relate to, and I kind of thought that was cool. I really loved it because now he has something that he has to fight for, and when he gets to fight the God Emperor, you really feel for him, and you pull for him, and you want him to win, you know, and I just thought that was, you did a nice job of bringing us into the story and making us care about how this is going to go. It wasn't just like a 90-page read where we didn't care. We actually, you know, he's got, not only does he have humanity riding on this whole thing, he's got, you know, this woman that he has met, he's got a lot of things riding on his own actions, and I just was dying for him to beat this emperor right in the ground. I was so happy to see him actually get there and challenge him. So I just thought that was wonderful.
Thank you. It was a blast to write.
It's such a good book. I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was so fabulously put together. I thought the art was really nice and clear, too. I thought that sometimes in these books they get really muddled, and it's kind of hard to figure out what's happening. But I thought the art, and according to it's Jim Fern and Jesus Redondo Roman, and then Francisco Tapias Lopez, if I'm pronouncing those correct.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, great. I usually fracture names really badly, but I tried really hard to get on those pretty well. What was it like working with these guys and making the story come to life?
It was a lot of fun. Jim was especially great, and what ended up on the page, I think, echoed really what I set out to do, which was to, in some way, recreate the feeling I had reading comic books in the early 80s when I was a kid. It was a time of mostly simpler art, and certainly the colors were much simpler and far more garish. And for some reason in my brain, that says more fun. It's more the Sunday newspaper comic strip, bright colors that somehow are alive, Flash Gordon-esque, and Buck Rogers. And even Star Wars in the 80s had some wonderful colors that I think, in hindsight, many people have dismissed as not as sophisticated as what we have today. But I really enjoyed them. And the colorist, Ian Hammond, is a friend of mine, and we worked together quite a bit to figure out how to recreate that feeling, but also have it seem modern in its own way, to not be completely out of place in today's marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Well, I liked it because, you know, I think variety is the spice of life, and I think so many books are determined to be morose and dark and moody that every once in a while I pick up a book and it's brightly colored and lots of fun and adventure. God, it makes my whole day, and I just thought this book was so much fun.
Thank you. We live in such a dark, miserable time, and it's now, after the bombing in Boston, it can be really horrifying out there, and more I find my work drifting toward the optimistic and toward fun. In some way, still trying to put in some bigger ideas, but not make people regret they live in the world that they do.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's such a nice and welcome, breath of fresh air to me to read something that is, like I like the word adventure. This is an adventure comic.
Mm.
And it just feels so good to me to sit down and dive into that for a while. And when I got to the end, I was interested because I noticed there's, at the very end, you say the beginning.
Mm.
And that makes me ask, do you have more Space Gladiator in mind for the future?
I hope so, but it's the beginning is also given the conclusion and where the story wraps up, and the fact that we're on the last two human beings in existence, that the human story is only beginning again instead of ending as it probably should have.
Okay. Yeah. I was kind of thinking, well, maybe there you had other Space Gladiator tales.
I do. Okay. I hope to be able to tell them. I love to.
Oh, great. Well, I hope you get to do it through Kickstarter again, because like I said, I thought this was a very successful book, and it was something that I think people should pick up and read, because, boy, I just enjoyed it tremendously.
Thank you.
Now, my understanding, too, is you've written comics, but you've got your fingers in other pies as well, I understand. You were saying before we started to record that you have some television projects that we might become familiar with before very long.
Yeah, I'm actually a full-time screenwriter. Comic books are the thing I do on the side to give me complete creative freedom. It's not something that you generally get to have in the film business unless you're doing some pretty extreme independent film. You're always answering to someone who's paying the bills. But yes, this fall, my television show that I created, Dracula, will be premiered on NBC here in the States, starring Jonathan Rhys-Meyers and Thomas Kretschmann, and on Sky in England.
Wow. Well, that'll be great, because Dracula, of course, is a very well-known character, and these days, vampires are kind of on the skid, so maybe you can revive the whole vampire genre. And
we definitely went back to the origin. We went back there as the showrunner, Dan Knopf, who created Carnival, says, though, there are no sparkly vampires. There's no toe gazing. It's Bram Stoker's Dracula. It's period. And being scared is very much part of the story.
Oh, wow. Well, that's because zombies seem to be the thing of today. So you could probably revive the vampires and make them. Of course, they always talk the Twilight stuff and things like that. So I don't think vampires ever really go away.
No. I think they'll be here for a very long time. Same with zombies.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's just something about the supernatural that just draws us. I guess that must have been kind of fun. It's quite a change for you if you're doing Dracula versus Space Gladiator, which is a very different story.
It is. There's a bit of a science fiction slant, at least in the use of theme and allegory in the Dracula series. Mm-hmm. But mostly I come from a very nostalgic view of science fiction, adventure, and horror. I grew up reading all of the gothic horror novels of Victorian England, Strange Case of Mr. Hyde, as I mentioned, being my last comic book series, a sequel to The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Mm-hmm. And Dracula, another love affair I've had for a very long time, and Space Gladiator has all of my love of monsters in there, as well as my love of classic action adventure from Alan Quatermain and King Solomon's Mines, and pretty much everything Errol Flynn did, which I watch pretty regularly. And so it's a strange mishmash of all sorts of stuff in there.
Well, it's relatable, and that's the important thing. And I think you blended them all very strongly together. You know, sometimes some of this stuff doesn't quite work, and you kind of look at it and go, like, why are they doing that? But this, to me, I never questioned what was happening. I was always going, ooh, that's interesting, and it just propelled me through the book, which was just a nicely done thing. I've got to ask, though, you know, since you're involved with television and things like that, might we see Space Gladiator turn into like a TV show or into a movie?
Kickstart and I are working on that very thing at this moment.
Oh, wow. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Dare I ask who you might think to be playing Till?
I think that there are several actors who could do it, but there certainly are some of the fantastic young actors out there like Channing Tatum and Chris Evans that I think are very appropriate.
I could be so lucky.
Yeah.
I hope this comes to be, because I'd like to see this as a movie. I could see plunking myself down in the theater and being lost for about 2 hours and really enjoying myself and cheering at the end of it, because that's how I was when I read the book. I was so happy with it. And I just think this is something that I hope it revives a lot of adventure in comics in the future.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Any other projects that you're working on that you'd like us to know about?
The movie stuff, most of that is fairly under wraps right now. There have been a few press announcements. I have a project at Sony called Dodge and Twist, which is a sequel to Oliver Twist that sees the main characters grown up and on opposite sides of the law. I make quite a living off of stealing from my childhood. And then I have another comic series coming up, which will be announced at Comic-Con, and that's with a bit of a legend co-creating and illustrating for me, and that's going to be quite a treat since I grew up reading his stuff.
Oh, wow. I'm going to keep my ear to the ground about that, because I'm going to be anxious to hear what it is. It's just great stuff. Well, Cole, I wish you a lot of success, and I hope I get to read your comics and watch your television and then view your movies as we go forward a lot. So I appreciate being able to talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you for reading the book, enjoying it, and taking the time to talk to me.
Well, I hope people will pick up Space Gladiator, because it's something worth buying and having in your collection. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com.
Time for news and previews, and there's a lot going on. Iron Man 3 has hit the theaters and did very well over in the UK and has done very well here in the States. There have been, of course, the usual mixed reviews for comic book related movies. Some folks really love it, some folks not so much, and that's understandable because Iron Man, of course, being an established character, some folks want him to be just like he is in the comics, and some folks prefer he would not be anything like that. But it's done well in the theaters and taking a lot of money. And, of course, this kicks off a very busy summer with genre-related movies, including Star Trek Into Darkness, which isn't far away. And then later on, Man of Steel, which actually I really love the preview that came out recently. So I would highly recommend that you spend some time this summer in the theaters and watch these comic book-related things, because the best that these do, that encourages other folks to make films based on comic books. So I would highly recommend you get into it. Then also, Free Comic Book Day has happened, and I want to mention a couple of the books that I thought were the ones most worth your attention. You might still stop by your comic book store. Some folks order plenty and have stuff left to give out after the Free Comic Book Day on Saturday. But the ones that I thought were really great
where, of course, the usual Archaea Entertainment has a flipbook with Mouse Guard and Rust. Both are really terrific comics, so I would highly recommend it. Boom Studios has a Kaboom Summer Blast, talking about their kids line, which I think is a great idea. You've also got Dark Horse Comics still emphasizing Star Wars, Captain Midnight, and Avatar. That's as long as they can still have Star Wars. I expect that's going to go over to Marvel before too long. DC Comics has DC Nation Super Sampler number 1 and Superman The Last Son of Krypton number 1, done by Scott Snyder and Jim Lee. Boy, I would hope you got that one. That was a good one. From Dynamite, there's Grimm, based on the TV show on NBC. There's also from IDW, Judge Dredd Classics and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles New Animated Adventures. You've also got from Marvel, Avengers Assemble, Hulk and the Agents of Smash number 1, based on their new shows that are coming on to Disney XD. And there's Infinity as well. From Oni Press, there's Rated Free for Everyone presents the Krogan Adventures of Merlin, and then Strangers number 1. So those are sounding like interesting ones. Rebellion has 2000 AD, always an interesting book, sometimes very funny with a strange British sense of humor. We've got Red 5 Comics has Atomic Robo and Friends. I always enjoy that book. If you're not picking up Atomic Robo, I highly recommend you do. Then we've also got Valiant Entertainment putting out Harbinger War Special and Valiant Masters 2013 Showcase. Of course, there's plenty of merchandise if you want to buy a shirt. There's a generic logo t-shirt and commemorative artist Jim Chung doing a black t-shirt and different variations. Of course, charcoal, silver, and white as well. So there's an eco-friendly canvas shopping bag you could have gotten. I bet they're still at the stores if you go there, because a lot of these things are going to be interesting to see. Those are the things that came out in Free Comic Book Day. In other news, there are some sales figures coming out for April already, and it looks like Batman number 19 was the top-selling book of the month, which is great for me. I'm a big old Batman fan, and I think that Mr. Capullo and Mr. Snyder are the dynamic duo of Batman. Over on Marvel, Thanos Rising number 1 was the second highest-selling title of April. Number 3 was an interesting one, Jupiter's Legacy number 1 from Mark Miller from his Miller World, which came through Image Comics. And also in the top 10 was The Walking Dead number 109. That book seems to have picked up some recently. And of course, if you go over to the top-selling graphic novel, gee, I wonder what that would be. It's The Walking Dead Days Gone By, the very first one. Now, Marvel once again ruled both the market share categories, and for the second consecutive month with considerable margins over DC. Marvel actually accounted for about 41.78% of all the units sold in retailers in April, and 37.95% of all wholesale dollars spent by retailers were spent on Marvel products. That's pretty significant. DC's market share was 27.72 unit share and $25.98 share. But helped by Miller and Kirkman, Image Comics showed its strongest month in some time, with 9.87% of unit share. That's pretty good for them, and 9.04% in dollar shares. But as become routine by now, the most important takeaway news from April was that overall sales were up from 2012 by 14.18% in dollars versus April 2012, with gains fairly evenly split between comic books and graphic novels. So that's good news for the industry. I think that's great. So let's hope that can keep up. The other members of the top 10 were The Age of Ultron number 4, it came in on 4th place. Justice League number 19 was in 5. 6 and 7 were more Age of Ultrons. Number 9 was Batman and Red Robin number 19. And Guardians of the Galaxy number 2 was number 10. So we get to the top 10 graphic novels. Once you get past Walking Dead in the top slot, The Manhattan Projects Volume 2 came in 2nd. Happy by Grant Morrison came in at number 3. Saga Volume 1 was number 4. Punk Rock Jesus, number 5. Batman Detective Comics, Volume 1, Faces of Death Trade Paperback was 6. Batman Detective Comics, Volume 2, Scare Tactics, the hardcover, came in at 7. Batman The Killing Joke Special hardcover was 8. Swamp Thing, Volume 2, Family Tree Trade Paperback was 9. And Hawkeye, Volume 1, My Life as a Weapon, came in as the number 10. So that's the news as far as April goes. DC is showing off pages from the Earth 2 Annual, which is going to introduce the new Batman of Earth 2. I still have my money down on an older Damian Wayne being the new Batman, but we'll see. It's going to be done by James Robinson and Nicola Scott, and the character is considered to be a mystery for the moment. DC isn't saying who it is and who is actually under that Batmantle, but we'll see. They do say that it is a character we know, so that still holds my Damian Wayne theory together. He's a huge part of Earth 2, he's going to be a huge part of the DC Universe, and everything he does from the annual onward will have huge implications for the DC Universe, said James Robinson during an interview with MTV Geek. This isn't some new person coming in to be Batman, this is definitely a part of Batman lore. So that's interesting stuff. In other news, John Ostrander, the famed writer of Suicide Squad, among other good things, is coming back to DC to write an issue of Aquaman. He's doing issue number 20 when Mr. Johns needed a month off from doing that. He's going to introduce a new character, and he's going to deal with the others and deal with the main characters that Johns has done such a good job setting up. Johns was initially announced as the writer of the issue, but he's going to be doing with other things with the Trinity War and things coming up, so he'll be busy with that. What's interesting to see is that Ostrander was approached by Johns to take over the issue, and that's kind of a neat thing for him to be recognized in that way. So Aquaman number 20 is going to have John Ostrander writing Aquaman. He did write the character, by the way, in the early 2000s briefly, so it'll be curious to see how it goes. And then the last bit of news, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Ender's Game trailer that's either out or coming out, depending on when you listen to this podcast. Ender's Game, it was a really interesting series of novels that was written by Orson Scott Card, and he's come into some trouble recently by criticizing gay marriage. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I love the comics versions that Marvel put out. I never got to read the novels. And I kind of think that we need to be really careful how we do this. I've always thought that we should let the people be the people and judge the merits of the work solely on the work alone. And if people decide that they want to, you know, boycott this Ender's Game movie, and from what little I've seen of it, it's really looking good. And I love the story. The story's really great. It's about a young boy who is recruited by the military and who becomes a real hero and a real dynamic force with his ability to strategize and to figure out what's going on. And I'd really hate for this movie to be shot down because people disagree with him on social issues. If you want to deal with him on social issues, talk with him, but don't let a good story go to waste. And I'm such a huge fan of good stories that I would highly recommend we give Ender's Game a chance and check out the trailer, which is either out or should be out very soon. And let's move into the previews. Coming out on Wednesday, May the 8th, are books including, from Arkea Entertainment, Mumbai Confidential Volume 1, Good Cop, Bad Cop, hardcover. That's $24.95. It's coming from Arkea, though. I would imagine it's worth the money, so I would definitely pick that up. From Big Dog Inc., there's a book called Legend of Oz, the Scarecrow, number 1 of 2. Oz certainly seems to be getting a lot of play these days. You've got the books from Eric Schanauer and team over on Marvel, and I think also IDW came out with one, or Image, one of the two. And so there's a lot of focus on Oz. I bet there's several movies coming, I bet you. We already had one that was The Greatest Wizard of Oz or something like that. So I think Oz will be around for a while. From Boom Studios, there's Fanboys vs. Zombies, Volume 2 Trade Paperback. Then you've also got Grace Randolph's Superbia, number 7, an excellent book. If you're not buying that, it's a very different take on the superhero genre, which I think is wonderful. Planet of the Apes Cataclysm, Volume 1 Trade Paperback. Steed and Mrs. Peel, Volume 1, A Very Civil Armageddon Trade Paperback. And Two Guns, Second Shot Trade Paperback. So all those are good things. From Dark Horse Comics, you get Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 9, number 21. So Buffy keeps going. And also Star Wars, number 5, with an Alex Ross sketch variant cover. You've also got X, number 1 of 4, by Dave Wilkins and Paulo Rivero covers. And of course, DC Comics has plenty that I'm interested in. They have Batman, number 20, which kicks off Zero Year, and should be good stuff. Batman and the Red Hood, number 20. Batman Arkham Unhinged, number 14. Batman Death by Design, trade paperback. Then the hardcover volume 1 of Batman Incorporated called Demon Star. $24.99 for that. Constantine number 3 is out. Deathstroke number 20, the final issue, is out on Wednesday. And Demon Knights number 20. Green Lantern Corps number 20. And there's an action figure for Simon Baz, the Green Lantern. He's $24.95. There's a third printing of Injustice Gods Among Us, if you didn't get it, for the first issue. From Justice League of America number 3. Then we've also got Katana number 4. Legion of Superheroes Volume 2, The Dominators trade paperback. The final issue of Ravagers, that's number 12. And at the same time, if you want to catch up on what you missed in the first couple of issues, Volume 1 trade, The Kids from Nowhere, is out. Smallville Season 13, number 11, based on the digital first comic. Suicide Squad, number 20. Superboy, number 20. And the final issue of Team 7, number 8. that didn't last very long, I guess. And Threshold number 5 with Mr. Keith Giffen involved, so you know that's good. From Dynamite Entertainment, you've got Grimm number 1. Then you've also got Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files Ghoul Goblin number 4 of 6. I'm really enjoying that series because I love the hardcover novels that come out from Mr. Butcher. So if you haven't been getting that, boy, I would highly recommend catching up on that one. Then there's Warlord of Mars number 24 and Warlord of Mars Deja Thoris number 25. Both of those are really good books. From IDW, you've got Rocketeer Hollywood Horror coming to a conclusion. That's number 4 of 4. You've also got the Rocketeer Adventures Treasury Edition trade paperback. That's only $10, so that'll be worth it. In light of Star Trek Into Darkness coming, there's Star Trek number 20, the ongoing book. Then from Image Comics, you've also got Thief of Thieves Volume 2, number 2 trade paperback. And Walking Dead number 110. Does that book ever let up? Not really. From Marvel, you've got Avengers number 11 and Avengers Arena number 9. You've also got Disney Princess Magazine, number 13, for those with young girls, and probably maybe even some young boys, you never know these days. Then you've also got Superior Spider-Man Poster by Marcos Martin, and Wolverine, number 3, with an Alan Davis regular cover. So, always like Alan Davis, good stuff. You got from Rebellion, Slaying the Grail War graphic novel, it's $30. From Titan Publishing, Star Trek Magazine, number 45, to go with the aforementioned Star Trek Into Darkness. From Valiant, you've got Archer and Armstrong, number 0, which has 3 covers, and Harbinger number 0, as well as Harbinger number 12, so you get your Harbinger fix this week. Then from Xenoscope, Grim Fairy Tales, not related in any way to the TV show on NBC. There's bunches of games, too. HeroClix Teen Titans Primer Booster is out. All kinds of stuff from Superman the Legend previews, trading card binders. Man, all kinds of gaming stuff that you'd like to have, I'm sure. The DC Universe Superman Unbound DVD is coming out this week as well. So be sure not to miss those. And those are the things that are out this week. That's it for this episode. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have more news, reviews, previews, and interviews on the Wayne's Comics Podcast, now on MajorSpoilers.com. But until then, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.